I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Disappearing in Reverse is a new novel from the writer Ellie McFarland, who joins me now. It's described as a mystery, a road novel, and a coming-of-age story. It's an engaging book, and I'll get Ms. McFarland to tell us as much as she'd like about the book, about its narrator, and the picture of Devin, someone who's died but who reappears in a photograph and triggers a journey for our narrator. The book looks at traveling on the road, the highways that cross this country, and the emotional journeys we take to find what's lost or who we are. Ellie McFarland writes novellas and lives in Victoria, B.C., where she joined me from a couple of weeks ago. She is the co-founder of the Anti-Langris Project, and her poetry and fiction has appeared in publications across North America. AllieMcFarland.ca is the website for more. This new book is published by University of Calgary Press. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Ellie McFarland. Ms. McFarland, good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
The book is described as a novel and a novella. Why both?
Well, the novella with the parentheses around the L.A.
Yeah.
Is kind of like a definition of like a genre that I was working on during my master's. And basically, I envision that as being a space where you're allowed to defy normal expectations of like the traditional form of novel more easily, because if you give it something a different name, then people aren't as likely to come to it with those same expectations, or they're already on like a more unstable footing, like, okay, well, I guess I'll see what you're gonna like give me with this.
Yeah. Would you describe your book as written in chapters? I mean, I see them as passages.
Yeah, I call them scenes, not chapters, which is like one of the big structural differences, is that novels usually have chapters.
Yeah, I find the way that it's written, I mean, they really are quite engaging pieces, themes. I can't wait to get to the next one, if you will, as I'm reading. They're quite engaging, and they have such a unique voice in terms of they're unlike anything, you know, one has read before. The voice is fresh, it has verve. How do you see it in terms of the way it's written? I mean, it is your voice, so I mean, one would assume that you'd say it's you, but I mean, where does that come from, say?
I think, like, the character voice through me, and I think a lot of it has to do with that I just kind of write the scenes. They are very short, so they have a lot of, each scene has to have a lot of momentum, so there's not a lot of, like, downtime, and I write them in just random order. So, and like half the fun is putting it together and seeing where the pieces fit. And I think that is a less common approach to writing bigger projects. Especially like projects that have a through line of narrative, like a poetry collection, say on similar, like a certain theme, or even with the same speaker throughout, the poems are often written in a random order and then assembled so that they make sense together, but they don't necessarily have to tell a story with plot all the way through.
Right. The other thing I notice and why I'm enjoying it a great deal is it's spare in that there's not a word wasted in the pieces, in the writing. Is that something that comes, say, from experience with poetry?
Yeah, I think I do some poetry, and it is definitely just a feature of my work across the board. Even as an editor, I work for a magazine that focuses on concision, so I just am very much, like, pared back, and this finished book is actually, like, my original drafts are so short that when the publisher accepted it, they said, okay, that's cool, but you need to give us more. So then I added about 40% to the book, actually.
Yeah.
So what is that process like? I mean, you, when you submit something, you think it's done. Well, not done, but, you know, almost done. When you have to go back and rewrite stuff, is that cause for say, a little more stress in one's life, say?
Not for me. Well, especially with Disappearing in Reverse, I wrote it, the, like, initial full-length draft in a creative writing workshop many years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then I sent it out to different publishers, but I kind of put it on the back burner when I went and was studying my master's, because I was very busy with that. And then it always takes publishers a while to read submissions, too,
sure, yeah,
and get back to you. So by the time they actually got back to me, it had been several years since I had really sat down with the piece. For a long time, for like an in-depth kind of work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of fun to get back to it, and also I had learned and grown a lot as a writer in that time. So when the publisher said, oh, we need more, and then I looked at it, I said, oh, yeah, I know exactly where we need more.
Mm.
Let me write some completely new scenes to fill it in,
yeah,
and others were just expanding scenes that are already there.
Yeah. Who narrates the story?
Who narrates? An unnamed protagonist who's, I like to call L, sometimes spelt with the letter L, sometimes spelt E-L-L-E, like the French word for she.
Yeah.
She's just kind of a young adult, in university, also has a job, and then she goes off in search of her dead cousin.
And that's Devin, right?
Yeah.
And in terms of how we're introduced to Devin in the book, how did you do that?
Oh, I think I did it through memories, but memories that were prompted by the narrator was just scrolling through Facebook,
mm-hmm,
and found a photo,
yeah,
that she believes is a photo of Devin, captioned, "She is not dead." And so then that lurches us into a memory of Devin, and then back to the present moment, and then her journey starts from there.
That's why I didn't finish the book, is because I don't want to give away anything as we're talking and people are listening to us. How much of the book deals with, say, guilt?
Hmm. I think that is a theme strung pretty much throughout the whole book. I think it kind of ebbs and flows for how present it is in any given scene, but I think it's with the narrator for sure throughout.
It's something that we all feel at various points in one's life. We don't like the feeling. I guess that's why we call it guilt.
Yeah.
But when death is involved or someone close to you, it takes on a greater meaning, and I guess for our central figure in Disappearing in Reverse, it sets them off on a journey, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Both literally and figuratively, I guess, because they head off on the road. And one of the things that I never liked about travel was you know, being in a car or something like that on the highway, even a bus on a highway.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I find it incredibly lonely, even if when you're with people. I just find it, you know, getting anywhere, you know, it's a pain in the ass compared to being, you know, where you have to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the book, you evoke the vastness of this country so well in terms of the highways and just the size of the land. It's also something that a lot of us have missed in these past few months.
Yeah, with being told not to go and travel. For sure. I think this is the first year since I've been driving.
So
maybe first year, over a decade or so, that I have not actually made the drive between Calgary and Victoria myself, or Calgary or Saskatoon.
Right.
You used to do those long stretches quite frequently, but not this year.
Yeah. So what is our protagonist in the book? What do they see along the way?
Just like in terms of.
In terms of the journey, I mean, they obviously meet. Fascinating characters along the way, interesting vistas of the sort as well, don't they?
Yeah, they get to. They have a lot of interactions with people and go to different parties and bars where everyone is just a little bit strange. Mm-hmm. They get to learn how to cook from a stranger. Which was fun. I really enjoyed writing the cooking scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The character has a knack for just meeting interesting people and getting completely sidetracked from her goal of finding her cousin to hang out with these people for some time before eventually remembering what she's set out to do and then going back. To her journey.
It's another thing we've missed over the last few months, isn't it? You know, just meeting random people and getting to interact in a closer way, say.
Yeah, so chance encounters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, identity is another theme that is contended with in the book. What did you want to say about who these characters are? And how they realize what they are, say. I mean, because at the same time, they also have to deal with how others perceive them.
Yeah. I think I just wanted to let these characters have space where they could discover themselves instead of being put into boxes based on other people's perceptions of them
mm-hmm.
or based on their own expectations of themselves that they have internalized from exterior forces, and just be able to kind of explore and redefine yourself, which I think is just important for most people to do.
Is it a making peace with or reconciling what people expect of you, or just finding one's own way and say, forgetting the rest? I mean, because what people expect of other people, I mean, dealing with that often weighs heavy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think it's kind of a little bit of a reconciliation of being that you'll let people down. And that their disappointment or frustration is not something you necessarily need to, hold on to. But you can, acknowledge it, recognize it, and then kind of see if that comes from something you need to work on or something that is less a you problem and more of a them problem.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's tricky to figure out. And I don't think the character gets it right all the time.
No. I mean, it's something that I think we all contend with. Most of us, I guess, our whole lives, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think you get something right and then something else comes out of place and you meet someone new and there's new perspectives, so it's always changing.
Did you always want to be a writer?
probably from when I was maybe 12-ish on, I wanted to write, but I was very convinced I was going to go to med school. Mm-hmm. And then when I was going to university, I got accepted into the biology program, was very excited, and had a last-minute panic that I couldn't possibly do that. So I dropped all the science courses and switched over to an arts major, and then just started taking creative writing classes.
And then did you feel then that you wanted to be a writer, or did someone in say your courses say, hey, this you, whatever you're writing is pretty good, why don't you pursue it? I mean, did you have, say, that happen?
Yeah, I've had a really good relationship with my mentor from the University of Calgary, mm-hmm. Aretha Van Herk, and I don't know if she said that exactly, but because she's very much lets you kind of decide what your path is. But she encouraged me a lot and led me to really think more critically about the craft of writing rather than just the narrative perspective or the characters. That's been, extremely useful.
Yeah. It is work, isn't it? I mean, rewriting is just as much writing as anything.
Yeah.
What is it like then in terms of the work itself, the craft itself, and does it take up a good portion of your day, say?
Yeah, I guess it depends. I'm not a writer that writes every day.
Mm-hmm.
I have a day job, so that's something, and so I kind of write in chunks usually, where I'll set aside time. If I'm working on a specific project, or depending on just what's going on with my life and everything, so usually write if I'm writing for 3 hours a day, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's about my max. Anything after that is kind of not productive time. But I can, at that point, I usually will go back and start reading over what I've written. And if it's a first draft, I do it by hand.
Mm-hmm.
So then after I've done my couple hours of writing, I'll type it up onto the computer, and I edit as I type the digital draft.
Yeah.
So that is still writing, but it's a different type of writing.
It's fascinating that you say you handwrite, I guess, the first draft. Do you have particular tools? I'm always curious when I talk to writers as to what they use and the sort.
Just pen and notebook. I'm not that fussy. I don't like pencil because it smudges.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same way when I have to, I prepared my questions for our chat today. I use this yellow legal pad that you can get at the stationery place, and I write everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, I'll repeat questions, and then when I get to the computer to type it up, that's when I notice when I've repeated myself, and then I can, only type that up once, and then order my questions the way that I think, the conversation might begin. But it's something about writing things out first. I guess you feel closer to the paper, don't you, with the pen in your hand?
Yeah, I think it's easier to keep going. If you're typing, or at least for me, if I'm typing something up and then there's lots of, spelling errors because I am terrible at typing words in the correct order,
mm-hmm.
or the letters,
sure.
know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mix up letters all the time, or I'll put the space bar too soon or too late.
Yeah.
So there'll be half words all over the place, and it's terrible. And that's so distracting, seeing all the red lines,
right.
Even just reading it and being oh, that is wrong. Whereas just if you're writing, I write in cursive, so it's pretty illegible anyway.
Yeah.
So you don't notice the errors and you just keep going.
Yeah.
Well, what is the anti-Langerous Project? Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The anti-Langerous Project is a online publication that does multimedia stuff, various forms. So we do anti-Lang is the magazine component. So we do digital publishing of 3 issues a year that are online, completely open access. And then at the end of the year, we put those all together into one anthology. And then we can mail that out to contributors or have it available for people to buy. But it's exactly the same as the digital. Mm. It's just nice to have paper copies.
Yeah.
We also do an on-editing blog series where we just share a lot about our editing philosophy, different styles, and how things have changed since we started the project. We have good short reviews that we just launched this year because we were really bored in quarantine in March.
Sure, yeah.
Everything was shut down. We were not working. So we got a bunch of books that were new releases that had just, you know, the ones that were coming out and then the pandemic kind of shut everything down. So we reviewed a bunch of those books for that. We did a far fewer books for the fall launch because now we were back at work and things are busy. And we also do Soundbite, which is a really cool audio component.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done 4 issues of that one, and we hosted it on YouTube where we had writers record themselves reading their pieces and then had that recording play with the screen the way that they wrote their pieces on the page. So that was really interesting because you could see how they were reading and where their line breaks were.
I'll bet,
It was a lot of fun, but YouTube is not great. Like, that only really works if someone's sitting there looking at it.
Right.
And listening to it. And so we've decided we're transitioning Soundbite into a podcast. So we're going to do that starting in 2021. And that's really exciting to just go to just straight up audio. Hopefully it'll be more portable for people and more versatile.
Yeah, and what is it like for you as a writer to have this community, as it were, online in terms of what it means for the craft and in terms of understanding what you do say?
It's great. It's amazing because I have the opportunity to edit so many good writers across Canada and the rest of the world, and I get to learn different kind of styles from different regions. I'm really fascinated by this Singaporean style of writing. I can't put my finger on what it is exactly, but there's just something about pieces from those authors that is just very different from North American writing. And so it's really neat to be able to read so widely because all of our pieces are 6 pages or under.
Mm-hmm.
So you just get a really short sampling of a lot of different work. And then that really pushes how I can push myself to edit different pieces that are outside of my own comfort or style.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also inevitably informs how I write and can give me a different take on how to solve a problem I might be having with a scene if something isn't working. And it's also created just community, especially with emerging writers in Canada. And now I don't know them in person, obviously, the ones that are in Ontario, say, because I've never even been out east.
Yeah.
But we follow each other on social media and stuff, and just, like, chat over different online messaging services. So that's been really fun to kind of meet new people who are passionate about the same things and just, like, see what's going on in different places.
Indeed. This is a very fine debut in terms of what's next for you. I mean, I know you're promoting this, but I mean, I'm sure people ask you what's next. Are you working on something new?
The piece I did for my master's project, I'm really hoping that'll be the next one. I think it's at the done point now to send out. And then, of course, there'll be the whole process again of getting it sent back to me to rework. But that'll be great, and that'll be fun when I get that opportunity. And then I also working on some sci-fi stories, which are just completely different from realist writing in a way, except that my style is very realist. So they feel just like a realist piece, but then it's a lot of, like, science fiction kind of stuff.
Right.
Sort of like, there's a Black Mirror episode. I think it's called The Grain, maybe? There's, like, this little rice thing that people put in their minds or chips, and then they can, like, watch a video recording that basically is from someone else's eye. Something like that. But the main story of that episode is not really related to that too much, but I'm explaining that very poorly.
But it just shows just how creative your work is in terms of what's next and this debut especially. I appreciate your time today, Ellie. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Congratulations again on this book.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Visit AllieMcFarland.ca for more. The book, Disappearing in Reverse, is published by University of Calgary Press. Its author, Allie McFarland, joined me on the line from Victoria, B.C., in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.